Hi, I'm Kathy Forstein, music director at KC Cafe Radio. It's been a great pleasure to put some faces with the music we've been playing on KC Cafe Radio when we were at the recent Far West Conference in Oakland, California. One of those faces was Michael Henchman. Michael is a wonderful singer, songwriter, and musician. He's been honored numerous times for his songwriting at the Woody Guthrie Festival, the Smoky Mountain Songwriters Festival, and the Tumbleweed Music Festival. Michael's newest CD, 40 Miles from Midnight, has been a favorite on KC Cafe Radio since its release earlier this year. Michael, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today on KC Cafe Radio.
Thanks. Yeah, great to be here, and good morning.
Yeah, morning. So you're out
whatever
in...
Whatever it is at your end.
You're out in Oregon, right?
Correct, in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you went to the Far West Conference. Was this your first time there?
It was actually, I have been, yeah. It was actually my third conference. I was there last year when it was in Oakland, and then a few years ago in 2011 when it was at Eugene, Oregon.
Why do you like to go to those conferences? What do you get out of it when you go to a Far West Conference?
I think the big thing, and this is probably true for most people who go, is just the exposure. And more importantly, it's the networking opportunity. It's a chance to meet other people doing what you're doing and sort of trade stories on things that have worked for you or for them in this case, things that didn't work, and just getting your head around new things that are coming, social media, just things that kind of help push your marketing forward a little bit more. And then on top of all that, it's just a good time. There's just a lot of music camaraderie that happens in the nighttime. A private guerrilla sessions going on in all the hotel rooms. Get a chance to just play music with friends. It's great. Sometimes
right.
It's only a few once a year.
Yeah. Have you ever written any songs working with anybody in that situation?
You mean like co-writing, for
yeah.
example?
Yeah.
No, certainly I've had some discussions around that, but so far I haven't done any co-writing. I've been just in my little songwriting cave.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of cool jam sessions going on, and it goes into the wee hours of the morning, and it's just a great time for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, the other people who are attending are also the presenters and some of the vendors. And so, especially for those that have come the first time, I spoke to a couple who has a house concert series just up the road in Olympia, Washington, and I believe it was their first time. So it's a chance for them to see a lot of people in a kind of concentrated situation and have their eyes opened by all the things that are happening on the presentation side.
Right, yeah. Do you go to any of the other Folk Alliance conferences or just Far West?
So far, just Far West. I'm slated to go down to SWRFA in Austin this next year. I'll be looking forward to doing that, which is, of course, SWRFA being the acronym for Southwest Regional Folk Alliance.
Right, yeah. I imagine there's a lot of professional songwriters that go to that one, Austin being such a big music city. And
oh, yeah. I mean, in a way, I may be scarred for this characterization, but it's kind of like the Nashville of Texas. I think there's a huge music scene there and a huge music community. Just a lot of people feel really tight-knit in that community. And I've got some friends I've made over time down there, so it'll be a good time going down there this next year.
Yeah. I recently judged a music songwriting contest for Dallas, the Dallas Songwriters Association. And it was just the songs were just amazing. It was so hard to pick the winners and the two runner-up. It was a difficult decision. I kind of had to listen to the songs several times to decide which one I, liked better than another. And so, yeah, there's a lot of great songwriters down there.
Yeah, I actually, now that you mentioned that, I believe that was one of the contest applications I'd done to Dallas Songwriters last year, maybe the year before, can't quite remember. Didn't make mm-hmm. that one, but I'd forgotten about that until you mentioned it.
Yeah, great music in Texas. Speaking of that, you've lived all over the United States. Where were you born, actually?
I was born just right up the road, just south of Olympia, Washington, on the military base there, which is called Fort Lewis. My dad was a career Army officer, so mm-hmm. we moved all over the U.S., mostly living on the coasts, but we had short stints in Kansas when I was a kid, and then we lived in Europe. I lived in Germany for 3 years. While we were over there, we did quite a bit of poking around in the car, and so we were, in the Alps and into Austria and into Italy, and that sort of thing was just beautiful from what I can remember, although I was fairly young at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then had a chance to return to Europe in 2011. I finally got to go to Ireland. That's something I've wanted to do for a long time, so it was a wonderful trip.
Do you come from a musical family? Was your family musical as well?
Somewhat. I mean, my parents were both opera lovers and to some degree classical music as well. Opera was on in the house all the time, and mother was a piano player. Dad was not musical, but loved to listen, and I think he picked the opera habit up from his parents, although I can't quite be sure about that. But anyway, there was music on in the house, and how I got involved in jazz music when I did seems like an odd segue from all the classical and opera that was in the house. But when I was fairly young in middle school, I got into playing jazz bass. It was sort of my first introduction to doing music myself.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah, jazz is something that, you know, I think when you're a kid, if you start playing it as a kid, you really learn to grow and appreciate it as you get older. I played in a jazz band when I was in school too, and it was, you know, to try to expose a young kid to jazz without them, I think, actually playing it, I think it's hard to get them to appreciate it. You just to sit and listen to it. But if you participate in jazz, I think it's something that sticks with you.
Yeah, I would agree. That's a different understanding. And I think, you know, especially now with just the explosion of music availability through the internet and so much indie music available and people able to self-produce and get stuff out there, there's so much competing for a young person's attention anyway. And there's such a huge push in terms of just marketing and exposure and playtime, actually, for a lot of pop music. That, the jazz stuff and some of the, you know, music forms like that don't perhaps get quite the same sort of mainstream exposure that they would. But yeah, I think for me, that's exactly what it was. I playing big band arrangements, which is what I was doing, really opened my eyes to the idea of layering of instruments and arranging. And it's what sort of kicked off my desire or my appreciation for doing arrangements when I was younger. And so that's now when I approach my songwriting and when I approach, you know, recording in the studio, I'm often hearing in my head a full-on layered song well before it ever gets completely finished. I can just like see and feel where it's going just because of that earlier exposure to the layering and arranging.
Yeah, that's great. All these places you lived growing up, which do you think had the biggest influence on you musically?
Well, I'd have to say, although I loved some of the jazz stuff I was doing when I was younger, but I lived in Alaska for 31 years, and most of my adult life up until 8 years ago, or 7 years ago actually, was up there. And so a lot of my sensibilities about music and the things I was listening to, and in part driven by just the wide open spaces that are there, and also just, I would say, kind of in partnership with that, the road trips that I've taken over time as an adult across the U.S. But certainly living in Alaska, it's a beautiful place, and that's a very understated way of saying how wonderful it is, just because there's a sense of wildness still there. And, you know, it's not like you can go from town to town to town. I mean, you get out away from one of the towns in a fairly short distance, you're in real wilderness, you know, like, it's you against the elements. And so for me, that sort of evokes what I refer to sometimes as the almost metaphysical cinematic landscape that I sort of feel internally, and that it finds its way, if not into the actual lyrics in my songs, it certainly finds its way into how I'm feeling when I'm writing them.
Did you guys move to Alaska because your dad was in the military? Is that the original reason?
Yeah, I was actually in school at Washington State, over in eastern Washington, and he got an assignment to move up north, and I had the summer off. I came up to join them in Anchorage, and then very shortly after that, moved up to Fairbanks and got involved with working on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, just construction worker, a pipe laborer. It was kind of like my early introduction to Alaska, and so immediately being thrust, even then, out into the wilderness doing that work. So it was the songwriting stuff was going to happen no matter what.
Yeah.
Because of what I was exposed to.
Does your brother write as well, or?
I actually have four siblings, two brothers,
okay.
Two sisters.
Because you mentioned one brother when we were there at
yeah,
the conference. So.
Yeah. None of them are songwriters, although several were musicians in school, all of them except my youngest brother, who didn't get involved in music, but the rest of them did in one way or another. And today, present, I'm the only one who's stayed with it is my next youngest sibling, my sister, who's an excellent flutist. She lives in Phoenix, and she plays flute and piccolo in the Chandler Symphony.
Oh, wow. Did any of them stay in Alaska, or did they all move to various places?
They all moved away. They were still young enough when that transpired that they moved when the family moved. I was the one who stayed behind and put a nail through my foot and stayed up there.
And so what do you think it was about Alaska that made you want to stay there? It's not like a thriving music community. Was it just the place itself, the beauty of the place, or did you feel like it was a place that you could express yourself musically?
I think there was that. I mean, definitely, especially in those years, and in Fairbanks, certainly there was, the music scene was, you know, very localized, and there was a few, you know, sort of few rock bands, and definitely sort of cabin folk music scene kind of happening there. But, you know, part of it, in all honesty, was just the hesitancy of me being young and kind of like, this is what's on my plate for now, and so this is what I'm doing because I need to eat. Mm-hmm. And so that was where the work was, and it's sort of like, this is where we are. We first get out, kind of kick yourself out the door and get out in the world, is kind of, you kind of deal with what's there. And so that was what was there for me. But very soon after that, I began to realize, especially if I would come south for a visit and go back north again, began to realize what a unique place it is. And it just, I can tell you, looking at the Northern Lights, or, you know, the summers with a great deal of sunlight. In the summer, you don't see the Northern Lights in the summer, obviously, but in the winter you do. But just the vistas, and something about the latitude of Alaska is such that, because of the angle of the sun, I know this is kind of almost sort of left-brain thinking, but as you get away from the longest days in the summer, the twilights there, morning and evening, are more extended because of the sun angle. And so There is this sense that, sometimes, you know, when I was doing some writing, either song or poetry writing, there's just almost a sense of metaphysically of the crack between the worlds, if you will, that seems evident, sort of extended twilights. So I was just up in Fairbanks this past week, and I had a chance to go back up and visit friends. And this is a time of the year when that's really evident, because it's past the equinox and you can really sense that long twilight. So it was wonderful to go back.
Yeah, I imagine there has to be something very spiritual and something that makes you closer to nature and God and all those kind of things there. You know, you're so much like on, almost feels like you're on the end of the world, you know. And
absolutely. And, yeah. Yeah, in those early years when I was up there, in one of my summers, a friend of mine had some property about 10 miles out of town, sort of northeast of Fairbanks. So I decided to buy a teepee, and bought a pretty large one from a company that's still in existence, actually. It's a company called Nomadics Teepee Makers. It's over in Bend, Oregon. They're the people that made all the teepees later years for the movie Dances with Wolves, which I was pleased to make. But anyway, so this was, you know, this is in the late 70s. So I spent the whole summer, you know, living in a teepee on my friend's property. And so there'd be plenty of times, especially at the height of summer when it doesn't actually get dark there, it's just enough south of the Arctic Circle that the sun does go down, but only briefly, and it only sort of swings below the northwest horizon and then swings back up again in the northeast horizon. Mm-hmm. So there's about 2 hours from, say, 11 at night to 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning, where it's just kind of dusty, not really dusty, and then it just gets light again. So there were a number of nights that I was up all night just, like, embracing all that for all the metaphysical, spiritual reasons you mentioned.
So were you writing on the guitar?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. I'm still a bass player, and I still consider that my main instrument, just because that was sort of way back in the beginning. I still do a lot of bass playing. Mm-hmm. But for writing, it's either guitar, sometimes piano. Sometimes I will write on piano these days, but mostly it's just for the initial ideas. Guitar is just sort of the easiest way to facilitate those.
Yeah, and it's easier to keep in a teepee, too.
Yeah.
My brother actually lived in a teepee for a while as well.
Oh.
I don't know where he got his teepee from, but I know he, you know, my brother was one of these kind of people who was a big storyteller, so you never knew quite what was the truth with him. But he had a teepee, and he lived out in, he lived a couple of different places. He would take his teepee and just put it up and, you know, stay there for a little while, and then he'd move on to another place. And
interesting.
So, yeah.
In the true nomadic fashion.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where was he setting his up? Where did he do that?
I think some in Texas, in Missouri. Texas and Missouri, I guess, is mostly where he was at. But yeah, interesting. So you also went to college. What did you study when you were in college?
I was just a psych major and actually got the calling, if you will, to go work before I finished. So I, you know, finished up courses many years later. But at the time, it was just like, that seemed like the thing to do. And I wasn't, as much as I am kind of a left brain person in some ways, as well as I'd like to say right brain artist, but left brain techie. At the time, I wasn't of the engineering mindset at all and wasn't crazy about math. So I went for, you know, some type of social studies or arts program. And in that case, it was psych. And then I was always stealing up to the music building to write. I was in a kind of a power sort of blood, sweat, tears horn band in college. So I was always running up to the music building to write horn charts for the band as well.
So were you playing bass in that band?
I was, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. And you're writing the charts. That's really awesome.
Not all of them, obviously, but you know, here and there, especially like if there were songs that I wanted to do, hey, let's do this. So I was running up to work the charts out. You know, we didn't have all the fancy electronics that we do now to figure it out with scoring and, you know, all these wonderful things. So it's just like the old copyist days, sitting down with score sheets and pencil and lots of erasers and working it out.
Yeah. So when did you start writing your own music? At what point was it you stopped doing just charts for other people and did your own stuff?
I was, you know, starting to write songs kind of sketchily even when I was in high school, you know, through my 20s. And then for a long period of time, got pretty deeply into playing jazz and was in some jazz bands, quintet in particular in Fairbanks, I played in a while. And then late 90s, I got into playing bass in a duo situation with a good friend of mine, and we played together for about 5 years or so. I started doing some writing again back in the lyrical folk Americana type thing, and just had songs I was stashing away, didn't quite know what to do with them, still had a big sort of jazz influence going on. And so it was, you know, a piecemeal approach over a number of years until I started really getting back into it strongly about, I don't know, 8 years ago or so.
What you do now is very singer-songwriter-ish, I think. Was what you were doing back then more for bands?
Oh, no, it was definitely singer-songwriter. I was, you know, very, very influenced by the earlier artists, James Taylor, Carole King, you know, that. You know, that sort of vein of musicians. There was a whole bunch of them back then playing on each other's records. Linda Ronstadt, Crosby, Stills, Nash. There were some interesting pop groups that came out at the time, like Firefall and some of those bands. But mostly for me, I was writing with the idea of writing singer-songwriter and writing either solo or writing with the idea that it would be, you know, acoustic guitar or vocalist up front with maybe a supportive band, that sort of thing.
What was the makeup of some of the bands that you were playing with? You said you were doing some jazz stuff and some duo things. Was this all going on at the same time, or were you going from like one style to another?
Back then it was sort of one to the other. They weren't happening consecutively. And so in the jazz quintet, for example, I was playing bass. In most of these cases, I was playing bass. So that was, you know, bass, drums, and keyboards. And then two guys were playing a trumpet and trombone. A trombone player actually is a guy named Leonard Nightholt, who's a fantastic trombonist who's been teaching for a long time now in the Sparks Reno area, and he's a member of the Reno Jazz Orchestra. He's a fantastic player anyway. Glad to know he's still out there doing it. That was a lot of fun. And then, you know, sort of the rock band situation, it was just oftentimes just a four-piece, so, you know, bass, guitar, occasionally keyboards, drums, that sort of thing. And I was playing in the duo with my friend in Fairbanks for a long time. He was a guitarist and vocalist. I'm posting mostly covers, a few originals that he'd written, but mostly covers, and I was playing bass and backup vocals at the same time.
And what band was it that you were in that opened for a Blue Oyster Cult?
That was a, interestingly enough, some friends of mine were, younger friends of mine, were in a metal band. It's my only time I've ever been in a metal band. It's so interesting. The guitar player for that band had come in at one point to audition for a guitar spot in the horn band that I was in, which was, that particular group was almost concomitant with the jazz quintet. It was mostly the same guys, what we were doing, you know, get into stuff like Sting after he got into doing the horn band stuff. Anyway, this guy had auditioned and wasn't going to work. He was just kind of more of a metal style, but as a result of that, I became friends with him. And then he had asked back in, I forget what year it was, 85, 86, said, hey, we lost our bass player. You want to come try play some bass in the band? I thought, what the heck? And so, you know, it was playing things like Scorpions and AC/DC, and it was definitely a different trip for me, but it was a lot of fun. It was really a lot of fun. And
did
we
you
got
grow your hair out?
Open.
Huh? Did you have long hair and makeup?
I didn't have makeup. I did have, years before that, my hair was down probably to the lower part of my back.
Yeah. Did you get to play cowbell?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I didn't go for that. I think we had a drummer though who was amazing. He was 18 at the time and playing double bass, the whole big sort of heavy metal kit, you know. He was quite good. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. That'd be exciting. And you also you've written some things for PBS. I've worked off and on for the last 20 years for PBS, and I'm just wondering, what were some of the shows you wrote music for PBS?
They were actually for the Alaska PBS affiliate station, the KUAC-TV in Fairbanks, and so they appeared on the Alaska Public Network. The only one that actually went national, and so I actually wrote for several shows that were for sort of, as we call, Alaskana or Alaska interest programs. Mm-hmm. The biggest one was actually a fishing series of all things called Angling Alaska. There's a whole, I think there was 13 episodes and 2 seasons, something like that. I'd written a theme song for that and a few pieces of Segway music. There was a historical show done on, used a lot of wood-fired steamboats up and down some of the rivers in the early mining days to haul a lot of freight back and forth. You have to get stuff in for the winter before the rivers froze up, of course. So there is one of the last wooden big steamboats is actually parked now in a park in Fairbanks. And there's a big restoration project. Historical Preservation Society did a restoration project on that it was a 5-year period, getting it all restored and quote-unquote ship shape again, pardon the pun. Mm-hmm. And I was tapped to write the music for that particular show. It was called The Steamer Nenana, Last Lady of the River. So that was a lot of fun. Those aired in Alaska. And then the Angling Alaska series was picked up eventually by the Outdoor Channel and aired on the Outdoor Channel for a while.
Oh, cool. So how did you get this gig to write music for PBS programming?
I was connected with just friends at the university there, University of Alaska Fairbanks, and through the friend of a friend, was introduced to the guy at the time who was the primary producer-director at the station, and he knew that I was writing, and we got to chatting, and he said, why don't you take a stab at, you know, writing a score for this show we're going to do on the restoration of the riverboat, the Steamer Nenana, and that's named after a town, by the way, south of Fairbanks. It's N-E-N-E. Let's see, Nenana, N-E-N-A-N-A, Nenana, about 50 miles south. But anyway, he asked me to do that, and I was sort of set up at that point with gear and keyboards and synthesizers and various things in my home studio. And so it was really a fun project to do.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. So were you writing, like, incidental music for it, and or did you write, like, the theme for the show, or?
It was, the opening, closing theme. It was all instrumental. There was no vocal or lyrical. So, yeah, it was great to work with, you know, sort of kind of, you know, forced me to think in terms of arranging again, which I hadn't done in a while. And so there was a bit of some orchestral type stuff that I was using some fairly good synthesizers to approximate, you know, strings and that sort of thing. Strings and English horn and so on. So, yeah, that was a really, you know, a challenging project, but at the same time, very satisfying. And I know that when it finally came on the air, it was fun to sit down at home and watch the credits roll.
Yeah, see your name on there. Yeah, it's always fun to see your name on the credits. Yeah.
Yep.
You're the only person looking for it, but you know it's...
You know it's there.
Yeah.
You know? And I had, you know, friends of mine, you know, afterwards for some time. And every year, by the way, when they do the fundraising, you know, as they often do with the public television, every spring in March, there was a spring fundraiser, and they would, during that week, they'd play a lot of the Alaska interest shows that had been produced in various ways. Mm-hmm. And the one I'd done the music for would always air. And so, you know, I'd had friends, hey, I saw your name, you know, so that was always fun.
Did they give you a free tote bag?
Yeah, no. I got my commission and I think a TV station coffee cup, I think.
Oh, well, at least you got the coffee cup. Either the coffee cup or the tote bag. You need to demand that every time.
Yeah, no.
So you lived in Fairbanks for quite a while. How did you decide to settle in Portland?
For a couple of reasons, really. I have family in the area, so and my parents live over in Central Oregon, and they're getting older, so I wanted to be closer to them, be able to help out more and not have the travel costs back and forth to Alaska. It got fairly prohibitive with the airlines. And I was kind of ready to go as well. I'd been up there for a long time. I wanted to do something different and wanted to get closer to Portland for its music reputation, which I knew was here. So I came here with the idea of connecting to the songwriting community, which I did fairly quickly. It took a little while to sort of find everybody. But once I did it, you know, it was kind of definitely, you know, sort of rolling forward ever since.
And how would you compare the music scene to Fairbanks to Portland?
Oh, I mean, there's really no comparison. I mean, for one thing, the population size alone is quite a bit different. And there's kind of a cool scene in a way in Fairbanks, but it's fairly small. There's a few bands, and there's just a very few venues to play. But everybody is, I mean, this goes back to the, you know, the long winters, and people have a community of friends. They're back and forth at each other's houses, and it's almost old-timey in a way, especially in the folk music scene, where people are getting together as much to play music as they are to share meals and have a good time, and we're all in this together, and it's 40 below outside. Mm-hmm. You know, but in terms of the huge, oh my gosh, the huge variety of music, there's multiple layers here in Portland. There's sort of like completely different spheres of music. You know, there's a huge jazz scene here, there's a huge folk Americana scene here, there's a huge rock and metal scene here, and so mm-hmm. You know, there's a few people who do sort of mash up things, and they try some experimental things together, but for the most part, these are really distinct and separate scenes that all kind of have their own thing going on. It's just huge here. It's amazing.
You also have a band, right?
I don't have a band. No. I've worked with some session guys. When I occasionally have wanted to do a full band show or have a band backup, then I hire a band. It's a pickup band. But generally, when I'm playing out, I'm either playing solo or duo. Yeah.
What kind of gigs are you playing? Coffee houses or bars?
Well, bar gigs are easier to do if you're a cover band. And so for people doing original music, it just works better in coffee house or smaller venue situations, which is what I've done. And, you know, I've been out of town, of course, on a few of the festival gigs you mentioned, and just slowly been getting into a few other sort of smaller venue situations. I have a really good friend of mine, a songwriter friend you may have met or at least know of, Kelly Brightwell. And so we've done some duo work together. And I play bass in her band. Actually, I'm a bass player for her band, and she's been getting some gigs around locally in town as well.
That's great. Do you ever venture out of Portland and do any shows outside of there?
Just starting to. I mean, just a few small things. I was just down on the coast here a few weeks ago. This is sort of the year that I want to push to try and do some more touring anyway. I haven't really had a chance to do that, and it's kind of like the next thing on my bucket list is to get that together and do a lot of tour planning this year, and not necessarily any big long tours or not trying to get out to the East Coast, that kind of thing yet. It's just not really where I'm at in terms of long trips and just sort of the expense management that we all have to think about when we're touring. But definitely want to get some more touring happening on the West Coast and see what I can do to work my way into some of the house concert circuit or some house concert venues. Would be great. Just kind of at that point where I want to start doing that.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, you know, house concerts would be a great way to get your music heard. Because your music is very intimate, and I mean, there's stories behind the songs. And to really hear your music, you know, you need sort of that intimate setting to hear all the lyrics and what you're saying in your songs.
Yeah, I think so. Like when you're an original songwriter, and especially if you have you know, things that you want to say, or you're venturing more often to even perhaps a metaphor, which I tend to do sometimes, it's just harder to get that stuff heard when you're in a noisy bar situation. It's much more fun and interesting and enjoyable to come in and sort of play to the crowd and you know, play either cover music or, you know, maybe some up-tempo stuff of your own mixed with cover music, that sort of thing. And I have some up-tempo tunes, but I definitely have some quieter stuff that I enjoy sharing in more intimate listening room settings.
Right. Yeah, and they're very different. I mean, that's a very different crowd playing to a house concert type is to playing into even a coffee house setting. It's a very different kind of vibe that you're kind of playing to there. So we're playing a lot of songs from 40 Miles from Midnight. Tell us about that title track and what that means. I like the whole imagery of that.
Yeah, that song in particular is pretty close to my heart, and where it's sort of the early genesis of that song was came from the fact my youngest brother had been working overseas and came home on a vacation halfway through his contract at the time, which is a few years ago now. My younger sister was living in San Francisco, and he and I agreed to meet there and do sort of a California-Arizona desert jaunt. And we weren't sure where we were going to go. We were just going to go. And ultimately, we ended up going across the Mojave Desert, and we ended up in Vegas, of all places. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, we can go see the Hoover Dam. And so, you know, that was a great time. But anyway, on the way back, we were taking turns driving, you know. And on the way back, it was nighttime, and it was my particular day to drive. I just remember him kind of being sleepy and crashing down the car, and I had the desert to myself. There were very few cars out. We were quite late at night traveling, and there was almost a full moon out, plenty of light to be able to see. I remember just seeing, well, I can turn my headlights off and see the road. It was just magical, and we were moving towards Bakersfield, so there's these lights way, way off the distance. You know how you can see the city glow, but you can't actually see the city yet. So there was that, and I remember just having just a couple lines in my head of a poem, actually. I was going to write it as a poem that dealt with, you know, 1,000 points of light, you know, and that sort of thing. And I just jotted a couple lines down, stuck it in my suitcase, and it got forgotten about. And I got home, and I found it, and I put it in my song folder scraps, and it got forgotten about for a long time. And then after I moved to Portland, I stumbled across it. I was like, oh my gosh, I still have this. And at that point, I was working with other ideas anyway, and the song just like blossomed, you know, just came out. So, it really captured for me, as I've said earlier, I have this interest in and a sense about what I refer to as a cinematic landscape. And it can be as much physical as it can be metaphysical in terms of what it makes us think about our existence, you know, the big questions. And I love that sense. And so that song in particular, it ended up in the story that came out of that song. It also is a bit of a leaving song. It's a relationship ending song. But that wasn't the focus. It was much more on reaching out for a moment of personal freedom.
I was listening to Circle Back earlier today. It kind of, first thing that struck me was like, oh, this is a train song. And then I was listening to the song a little bit more, and it's like, no, this really isn't a train song. The song is a little bit more than that, you know? Tell us about Circle Back and what that song's about.
It's almost the opposite end of the, or maybe a bookend is a better way to think of it, of 40 Miles, and that's a coming home song instead of a going away song. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just, again, these stories about, you know, people that have been away from a place for a really long time, and then for whatever reason, personal reasons, or needing to reconnect with their past, or maybe there was an unfinished relationship that they hoped to find that person again, or, you know, those kinds of themes and elements. When that song came about, there was a train reference in the beginning and first verse of that song, that lonesome train. Just because there's so much, because of what happened in the labor movements in this country and during the time of Woody Guthrie and all that was happening, and people moving across the country by train because they didn't have cars or couldn't afford them, and finding work where they could. There's something about the mystery of trains in a way that's very metaphorical, that sort of symbolizes in a way the lonely hero archetype, if you will. When I was just writing that song, I just thought about, it came out initially out of sort of just some free writing one morning, and this story started to emerge, and I went, wow, I need to actually get this into a song. Mm-hmm. And this idea of someone coming home from a long time ago, and even the memories are still a little loose and not sure if you're going to find, you know, people that you know.
Yeah, I really like the lyrics to that song a lot. It's really good. And then one more song I wanted to ask you about is Motel Dog. What's that song?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, well, there was an outlaw anthem. That's what I call my outlaw anthem. It was how that came about, it's one of those songs that just sort of came almost in one go. I was talking to a friend of mine. There's a listening room in Portland called the Artichoke Music. Some people may know of it. I was there one night watching the open mic and was talking to a friend of mine, and he made some mention about a story, but he said, it sounds like one of them there motel dogs. And I just looked at him and I said, motel dog? He said, yeah, you know, one of those kind of dogs that doesn't actually live anywhere, but everybody takes care of. And boom, I said, okay, that's a song. I got to do that. And I went home that very night and got almost all the lyric. And basically, the wording of the song is such that you can almost take it two ways, but definitely there's the outlaw type. And that's the idea that somebody who's really kind of living on the lam and doesn't really have any friends, or doesn't make friends or doesn't want to, and living sort of below the line of propriety, if you will, and moving on from place to place, and no one can tie them down, that sort of thing. And that's the genesis of that song.
Yeah, they're their own person.
Yeah, no, it doesn't really have any place to be. You know, he's couch surfing if he has to, and maybe a little sketchy, and maybe doing a little bit of, you know, petty thievery. And you
know, that. Maybe the life of a traveling musician, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I hope we don't have to be engaged in petty thievery
and
keep going.
Usually not, but, you know, couch surfing, that sort of thing definitely happens.
Sure, oh yeah, definitely that part, yeah.
So you write a lot. Are you writing like every day?
I would like to be writing every day. I think just the normal sort of pressures of life and keeping other things together are such that I don't. But I do write pretty often and pretty regularly. And there's, of course, as is the case with a lot of people doing what I'm doing, there's a lot of ideas that get crossed out or don't see the light of day, or you kind of, you know, hit a dead end. And just as many songs you write, just for the, you find that they're good for the practice of writing, but nobody else is going to hear them.
Yeah.
And it's just part of keeping the grist for the mill, so to speak, and mm-hmm. Kind of that songwriting sense moving. But it's good to do that. I mean, all writers who do that, whether you're writing songs or writing prose, you have your good days and bad days, and perhaps it's not even right to say bad days. They're just days when you're writing for the exercise. It's good to kind of shake things loose and work on your imagery and tone and kind of focusing on, you know, who's the main character here and what's mm-hmm. happening. Even to the point sometimes in your songs of not getting your syntax mixed up and having it be confusing to the listener.
Right. Yeah, that's a good idea. So you also did an EP earlier this year called Near and Far, which came right on the heels of 40 Miles from Midnight. Why did you put out an EP right after a full-length album?
They were songs that I had been thinking about even as I was finishing up the other record. And the other thing is that I really wanted to do, since 40 Miles, that record is kind of full-on Americana band. There are two or three maybe more acoustic-oriented tracks on it, but it's pretty much full band. I wanted to do a smaller-scale acoustic, kind of stripped-down acoustic record, in part, if no other reason, and there were other reasons, but for demoing purposes, for bookers, if I needed to send something out to venues that were looking for, you know, a smaller sound. Difficult to demo yourself when you have a full band and then you say I'm a solo artist. They don't have a sense of what you sound like. So there was that sort of practical piece involved in it, mm-hmm. but for the most part, these songs, as I was working on them and arranging them, it's just the way that they spoke. They mm-hmm. needed to be more stripped back and more acoustic sounding, and it's what really brought it to life for me.
So what do you have planned for next year?
I have a couple things. As I mentioned earlier, I'm just working on, got the big spreadsheet out of, kind of how, where I could go with setting up some tours. I've got to send a lot of request letters out trying to get squared away with venues. So there's a whole tour planning thing that happens. There's a lot of administrative work. Anybody who does this knows you spend a lot of time on the phone, a lot of time emailing and figuring out your schedule and your calendar. So there's that piece. But from an artistic sense, what I'm excited about also is I've got the next record looking at starting on in spring. Got most of the songs that I want to put on are either finished lyrically or partly finished, or they've got some music. So there's a bit of tweaking I've got and kind of set aside this winter as my woodshedding winter to get those finished up. And then I'm going to start recording hopefully in late spring to get that thing done by the end of summer. It's a little different than recording with a full band going out to a house on a beach somewhere and recording a record in 1 week mm-hmm. when you're by yourself, and it takes a while to... we're doing a lot of multi-tracking. It takes a while to pull everything together and get things, and I'm a perfectionist anyway. I mean, I'm really, really, really picky. And mm-hmm. so, I'm sometimes micro-editing things that I probably shouldn't, but I just can't let it go.
Yeah. So what kind of instrumentation are we going to hear on this new one?
I think it's going to still be a little bit more acoustic focused, but fuller band acoustic focused. There's mm-hmm. definitely some songs that I there's a couple songs that have kind of a rockabilly feel, and so there'll be some little electric guitar with a little bit of slapback echo, or maybe some tremolo guitar, those kinds of things. Some of the ballads are going to definitely have probably some piano, and one of the things I really love is textures involving electric guitar with volume pedal swells, those kinds of things. They sound really good to me. And so some of those are some of the textures I'll probably pull into the songs.
Very cool. I look forward to hearing it. Sounds like it's going to be really good. As good as 40 Miles from Midnight, which I don't know is possible, but I'm sure it will be.
I hope so. I mean, it's like once you've done those, it's like, okay, now you have to, you got to work at keeping the quality up. And so that means being pretty judicious about what makes the cut and what doesn't. And sometimes you have to set aside a song you really like, if it's not working. There's definitely a single that I had slated. It was fully produced for the 40 Miles record, but it was a little bit more of a reggae feel, and it just wasn't going to fit the record. And so it's sitting in the bin waiting for another day.
Yeah. Well, when you put out that reggae album, then you can put it on there.
I'll just figure out some like reggae Americana, some way to
I'm sure
the record.
They'll make that category at some point.
I definitely, Americana being what it is, it's become such a wonderful melting pot. It used to be much more specific and perhaps mm-hmm. more acoustic, but it's a much wider circle now, and there's people bring in elements of jazz and alternative and country and some rock and folk. And
yeah, even some like Dixieland jazz kind of things, you know, are in Americana now. So, yeah, it's a wide open category.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, there's a certain vibe to it, even when it has that wider context. You know, you're listening to Americana versus just, you know, pure straight-up country, if you will, or pure rock and roll. It's just because there's such a wonderful writing going on these days with a lot of artists that it's given it a chance to get some wheels under it, I think.
Yeah, I think musically, the big difference between Americana and a lot of the others is the lyrics. The lyrics seem to have more of a meaning to them and more of a feel to them than, you know, say, country music tends to have anymore, you know? So.
Yeah, in the popular music, in other words, yeah, I would agree with that. There's definitely a lot of imagery and thoughtfulness that goes in a way. It's maybe perhaps even, you know, it's non-mainstream, although it's sad to say that. And it has a mainstream focus of its own, but maybe not so much in sort of like mainstream commercial radio and that sort of thing.
Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I want to let everybody know where they can find you. You have a website, michaelhenchman.com. It's Michael, HENCHMAN.com, Henchman. So make sure you go there. You can download his songs and listen to them there. And you can go purchase them at CD Baby, iTunes, and Amazon. And then you also have a music page on Facebook that people can find your music there as well and what you're doing musically. Is there anything else you need to let the folks know about?
There's just, if someone wants to check me out for streaming music, also I have a page on SoundCloud, and that's just at soundcloud.com/roadsongs. They can find me there as well.
Great. All right. Well, check out Michael Henchman at michaelhenchman.com. And like I said, once again, it's CD Baby, iTunes, and Amazon. And of course, you can find him on KC Cafe Radio. Request his music, and you'll fall in love with his sound and his songs. And he writes some really, really great, deep, meaningful songs. And I just love your songwriting style. It's great.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks very much. I really appreciate that. Thanks for having me on KC Cafe.